discovered America. Yeah, I discovered America. Yeah, I discovered America.
And good morning, good morning. It is 6 minutes after 8 o'clock this morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani, along with my co-host Lynn.
Good morning, Ani.
And this morning, we're very pleased to bring you our guest, Dick Roy. He is the co-founder of the Center for Earth Leadership and the Earth Institute before that. He's been working towards the goal of getting people involved and actively being a part of the solution since the early 90s. Dick, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us this morning.
I'm really happy to be here.
Excellent. This morning's discussion, we're going to be looking at making cultural changes and taking that action into our own hands in very localized efforts. You know, as I'm sure we've all noticed, we're surrounded by challenges. Our habitat, read that, our planet is in a crisis. We can see this in climate change, in the pollution of our air, our water, our food, in deforestation, in mining, in the damming of rivers. That's just for starters. Our economics are based on exploitation of our resources and of one another. Our economic system is failing in all but serving the super rich. And unemployment rate is soaring with foreclosure rates at an obscenely high level. Our communities are fragmented. Many people are experiencing a sense of powerlessness and alienation, knowing that something is wrong, but not really being able to get a good handle on what to do about it. It's time that each of us take those challenges into account and take action to turn things around. It is time now to develop alternatives to the current scenario. And it is each and every one of us that has to engage in that turning. The Center for Earth Leadership is an organization that offers ways to do just that. So I'm very excited again to have Dick with us this morning. And let's start there. Can you describe in broad terms the work of the Center for Earth Leadership?
Yes, when my wife and I started the Center for Earth Leadership, we coined the term Earth Leadership. And the idea behind Earth Leadership is that each of us, as individuals, through our actions, can contribute to a sustainable future. And then we took that and have defined four quadrants. And the first one would be in paid work. Now, you, for example, if this is paid work... are helping to create a sustainable
only
future.
In satisfaction.
Well, some have paid work where they can. You might say their work is consistent with their highest ideals.
Mm-hmm. And I get to. I guess I'm definitely privileged to be able to say that, as I am one of the few staff people here at KABU helping people learn how to make community radio happen.
Well,
it is
a privilege for most people to be paid for something that's consistent with their highest ideals. Mm-hmm. Second quadrant is personal lifestyle. We all have a lot of choices we can make in our personal lifestyle. The third one is in being an agent of change in your circle of influence, which is the primary area that we work in right now. And then the fourth is being an advocate.
And let's actually talk a little bit more about what those quadrants are. So the paid work, that makes a lot of sense. That's, again, as you were saying, actually finding a way to sustain yourself economically, doing work that's consistent with your values and your own vision of how life should be.
Right.
And that's a challenge, I think, for many of us. I think in this economic time, many people are like, wow, if I could just be a barista right now, you know, I that'd be good with me.
Exactly. Well, you have some who, let's say, we have young friends who have become CSA farmers and kind of decided that they're going to do farming.
You want to tell our listeners what CSA is?
Because some folks might not know. Community supported agriculture.
Okay.
And then they grow crops and their customers buy a share of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
And then that helps sustain them for the year. And then some like the profession of architecture, because green building is so popular now, then there are architects who can feel like they're making a contribution through that work. So you find it in varying degrees in a lot of jobs, but for a lot of people, the job is not the place to where they can actually work toward their highest vision or their highest ideals.
And in fact, it's just sort of a means to get by so that they can participate in the rest of their life.
It is. Now, fortunately, the other three quadrants, each of us can contribute in those.
Absolutely.
Well,
so,
are there ways that perhaps you help people find ways to make the job they have that doesn't maybe seem quite up to their highest standards get to change it somehow, or to change their attitude toward it while they're in it? Or,
you know, we don't really work in that area in terms of telling people what they ought to do. Everyone,
I just meant helping, not telling them what to do.
Yeah, no, we don't really attempt to help them. We just recognize it as a quadrant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever workplace you're in, there's a huge contribution you can make, whether it's just being a spark in the lives of others, or there are huge contributions. But if you take the end result of your work, you may say, is that consistent with my highest vision? And you
right.
may say, well, it's consistent with the vision of my employer. And although I respect that, it's not my highest vision.
But let's talk about what we can do in the here and the now. Even if your job, your paid work, if you have one, is may or may not be an expression of your highest ideals, being an agent of change in your circle of influence is something that is available to each and every one of us, no matter where we are at any time.
It is.
Let's look at that quadrant. I'm intrigued.
Okay. Well, if you just imagine the city of Portland as a mosaic, and there are a lot of pieces in that mosaic, and let's say for us, the goal would be to have those pieces getting greener. The two pieces that we work with are an individual. In fact, I'm Dick Roy. I contribute to the culture, and we work in circles of influence. And that would be, I'm Dick Roy, I'm a member of Boundary Street Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So a circle of interest would be anything that I'm a member of. I could be a member of a church, a workplace.
A community radio station.
And as a member of something, then I have standing. I know how it works. People will listen to me. And I can work in a way to facilitate change. We can't change folks, but we can try to facilitate change.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And also, one way folks this morning can contribute is we've got an email address for Positively Revolting now up and running. It's positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. So send us questions, ideas, and we'll try to get those out on the air.
Of course, you could still do it the old-fashioned way.
I know, and we've also got a phone number, which is 503-231-8187.
So do give us a call or log in and let us know your questions, your thoughts, your comments this morning. Join in this conversation. It's participatory, after all. Let's look at the other two quadrants before we move on from that. Personal lifestyle, which, you know, I think a lot of us sort of, it seems like there's two schools of thought. It is the only thing. Personal lifestyle choices will save the world. Or what can I do? I'm just one person. You know, no one's going to notice the effects I have on this planet when there's mega corporations doing resource extraction at an obscene rate. How do you see personal lifestyle as fitting in this?
Well, in the case of personal lifestyle, because we live in a society which is not sustainable, it's because we're using resources and we're using energy at levels that can't be sustained, then the way we look at personal lifestyle is you're shifting your passion. And just as an example, let's say someone has a passion of visiting every country in the world. Okay, well, that requires a lot of energy to do that. Now, that person might shift their passion to, well, why don't I be an entomologist in my backyard and find out what insects? Because we all have total control over our passion, then the process of lifestyle generally involves shifting our passion to things that consume less energy and resources.
That makes good sense to me. And advocacy, what do you mean by advocacy as that fourth quadrant?
Well, advocacy would be taking steps to persuade or force change that's really in the hands of someone else. And that could be in the form of lobbying, boycotting, street theater, I suppose. Anything where you're taking steps to cause an entity usually outside your control to change.
You know what? We've got a caller on the line.
All right, fabulous.
Franny, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. What's up with you?
This is a great topic and one that I feel is really close to my heart. Because I try, you know, as best I can to live sort of green lifestyle. But I find that there are some things that, I find there's some things that you can do at the workplace that I've done and that coworkers have done. And I work in a really corporate environment. But one of the things that we've done there is to do things like share one waste basket, you know, so that every night the people who come in and clean aren't getting rid of a plastic waste basket liner from, like, everyone's individual waste basket. I try also to throw my, like, wet garbage into the communal, like, kitchen larger waste basket. I turn off my computer at the source, you know, at the power strip every night. A lot of coworkers don't because it's, you know, convenient for them to just turn it on when they get to work.
I know, that 5 minutes. You know, you could have a little sip of coffee or something.
Yeah, so have some tea. And the thing is that I just said the S word on the radio, sorry. But, you know, the thing is that everybody in the beginning of the day is gabbing anyway. Nobody comes right in and just works. All like, how was your night last night? That kind of thing. So, you know, that is a time when you could be booting your computer. I also take the bus to work as much as possible. I also, if I'm going to get to-go food, I bring my own container, as do many of my coworkers, so that we're not using clamshells and, you know. But I see a lot of waste in the workplace. And one of my questions to you, I guess, is, you know, I don't want to be a nag, and I do want to lead by example, but I still see just so much waste and, you know, people who sit, you know, right near me just, like, throwing out, you know, the Starbucks to-go Starbucks cups and, you know, not bringing a to-go cup that they can fill and, you know, throwing out these clamshells and other bits of plastic. And, you know, this is so wasteful. So what do you do? I mean, how do you say these things without coming off as superior? That's my question.
It's a good question.
Well, we have a course. Our primary course, which we offer without cost, is how to be an agent of change in your circle of influence. And we've had 650 folks go through that. A lot of them choose the workplace. And just a couple of ideas without exploring that in excruciating detail.
Yeah.
Usually, if you choose a workplace, the first thing that someone does is, if there's not a pre-existing sustainability team, is to take steps to organize a sustainability team. And those can be just very informal groups of employees that meet at noon. And then you have a group to work with. What you're doing, in effect, is you're changing the context. This is The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell has a couple of chapters on this. But you're changing the context of the workplace so that when someone comes into the workplace, they see that there are norms in the workplace. If you take the idea of turning off computers, for example, some green teams have set up a green squad that after working hours will go around and ticket the computers that have been left on.
Mm-hmm.
And just that changes conduct immensely, even though it's done with kind of a sense of fun. In other words, it's not a blame game. It's kind of, you've been ticketed, okay? And
you have been served.
You have been served, right. There are others who might say, well, what I'd really like to do is have composting in the workplace and change the context there, because there will be green composting bins. And then a new employee who walks in the workplace looks at a green composting bin and says, gee, there's something expected of me. So it's kind of changing the context in a lot of different ways so that the norms within the workplace change. And it does take, you know, depending on the workplace, it can take some time.
Well, you know, and I think the city, as if I recall, has like a little prize at the end of the year for the most sustainable business. I know I'm a hairdresser in our salon. We even recycle that. We send the hair out for mats, oil mats, for way longer than, but way before Katrina.
The BP incident.
That's right, the BP incident. And another salon I know won this prize. So I don't think it's just for hair salons, but I think it's like there is a cash dollar thing that the city of Portland is actually doing for the most sustainable business?
The city does have an awards program, and they have one recognizing the businesses that stand out. And then they have another program, I've forgotten the name of it now, where you can qualify. Everybody can qualify if they take certain steps.
Mm. Is there a link to that rewards program on your website?
No, but there could be.
That would be awesome.
It would be, wouldn't it? I just thought of it right now, so I'll try to get something up there, okay?
That would be great. Okay, thanks a lot.
And one thing,
you know, you could go to the city, too, and find it.
Okay,
or
great.
Go to the Lord Google.
And if you go to the Center for Earth Leadership website, then although those tools have been prepared for, we have one project that focuses on law firms. There are six tools for a sustainable law office, but those six would work in any office. So if you, and those deal with model policy, operations, tenant improvements, what to expect from the building owner, green events, and one other one.
Thanks.
All right. This work of the center grew out of your previous work with the Earth Institute. Can you talk a little bit about the development and how one thing led to another?
Yes. It was actually back in 1987, and by then, advanced ecological degradation was on its way, and that was actually a time when we realized that climate change was coming. Then my wife and I spent some time at the coast thinking about what we might do to contribute to a sustainable future. And we formed the Northwest Earth Institute, and at that time, our goal was to raise awareness. And so we created discussion courses and started offering those in workplaces, homes, churches at noon. And at the time, those were on deep ecology, which is earth ethics, voluntary simplicity, discovering a sense of place, globalization and its critics, choices for sustainable living, and healthy children, healthy planet. And then over the years, I think we had enrollment of 75,000 in groups of 10. They kind of spread around the United States. And in 2006, we left the Northwest Earth Institute so it could have a paid staff and a sustainable future, formed the Earth Institute. And when we formed the Earth Institute, because awareness was much higher, in 2006, Al Gore was running around with climate change, then the idea behind the Center for Leadership is because awareness is higher. The real issue is, what can we do? And we didn't want to wait around for progressive public policy. We knew the era of charismatic leaders was really over, and that without a movement from the grassroots to take the real leadership, then we probably would never attain a sustainable culture. And so we've been working with that goal in mind. Now, in a way, we simply provide resources and excuses for other people to do the work. So, you know, we're not actually doing the work. The 650 agents of change, they're doing the work. So we're kind of there to give them an excuse to get organized and do something.
Excellent idea.
Would you say it's accurate that your goal really is to get people out of that place of despair and inaction and into a place of seeing themselves as empowered to make a difference, taking direct action in their own lives?
I think that's a fair statement. And the other thing about it is, it's actually a hopeful process, because if you're dealing in your neighborhood or your workplace or something, and you can say, well, I've taken a step and I've made a change, then you're having fun with your colleagues. And it's, you know, if you spend time with people who are concerned, people of goodwill, people who are trying at whatever level they can to make a difference, then that's very hopeful. Much more hopeful than reading, you know, about all of the global problems that we have.
The disasters. And speaking of hope, we've got, I think we have another caller, don't we? Amy's on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning. What do you have to say to us today?
Well, I'm thinking about the cars. I haven't had a car for 7 years, and I find it's interesting. It's not completely comfortable to hear people who are just really upset about somebody's cup and they're driving a car. you know, a reusable cup is better than a throwaway cup, but a car is really dumb. And I'm walking, I'm taking the bus, the train. Portland's a great town for public transportation. But cars are sacrosanct, and I'd like you to talk about cars.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call.
Thanks.
I think when it comes to personal lifestyle, that cars are a big part of it. Most people find that there's an area where they can take steps to consume fewer resources, and then everybody runs into a wall at some point. Now, if you take some of the big ones, the car, the home, the size of the home, what we eat, flight travel, you know, those are all really big ones. And it's easier for some people to move in one area than another. For example, I've made, you know, a pledge quite a while back that I'll never fly again. That's a very easy thing for me to do because I just shift my passion to not things that don't require flying, and I haven't, it doesn't skip a beat. Now, to say, well, I'm not going to have a car would be a much harder step for me. Mm-hmm. It's easy for us to say we won't serve meat at home. There are other things that are harder. So the idea behind it, we aren't judgmental about people, but the idea is to look at over kind of the things that you're doing that consume energy and resources and figure out a path of least resistance for you. Now, not having a car, I admire that. I applaud that because that's a huge one.
It is. I don't have a car, but thank goodness some of my friends do. I mean, it's crack cocaine. You know, screens, cars, we all have our crack, and it's so easy to get when one. I mean, it takes so much less time, but I also feel dedicated about not having a car.
Again, as the caller pointed out, Portland is a city where public transportation, as long as you're in the core, makes that a real viable alternative. So thanks for that question and discussion. For myself, often hear the sort of David and Goliath sort of sentiment. What do you say to the person who says, I'm just one person? You know, these huge issues of globalization, of climate change, the economy are overwhelming. You know, what possible difference is it going to make if I, don't use a disposable cup, or even if I give up driving? I'm just one person. Everyone else is still driving. I often hear this, and it's almost an excuse to do nothing. But I don't think it's used as an excuse to do nothing. I think it comes from a deep sense of powerlessness. How do you help to shift somebody out of that powerlessness?
Well, I think that all of us feel impotent in a lot of ways because of particularly the corporate control of so many things. And in our view, what we do is we kind of keep our eye on what I call the four primary contexts. And one would be economic globalization. And we're sponsoring the documentary by...
I was going to ask you about that.
Helena Norberg Hodge tonight, who really is focused in that area. The consumer culture, we live in an era of advanced ecological degradation, and then we put carbon and energy in there because they're so key to this. And kind of keeping an eye on the global context, you know, it's like being in a river, and we know the current is taking us in a direction.
Right.
And then focusing more on what we can do. Now, we all know that we have to vote our energy and dollars for our culture that we would like. And if no one does that, then we'll allow the trends to be dictated by others. So that even though we're making a very small contribution, if we're an agent of change and we pick out a small piece of it, then we can actually feel the influence that we have. We can see it. We can experience it. And it's very empowering because...
Well, and I loved your analogy. If we look at it as a mosaic, with each of us doing what we can within our very localized, spheres, be that our neighborhood, our household even, or our workplace, our community places, be that a church or an organization you belong to. If we look at that sphere and do what we can to promote the idea of a sustainable future of you know, this direct reclamation of our local communities, our economies, our way of being with each other. And if each of us do that, as you were saying, that mosaic can turn a deeper green, just square by square by square, as these spheres start to connect.
That's right. And in our eco school network, we have parents from 32 schools.
Let's talk about that. So the Eco School Network is a project that came about through the Agents of Change program?
Yeah, well, what happened when we were offering the Agent of Change program broadly, people would come in and then we focus on the how, they focus on the what. Mm-hmm. So they decide what circle they'll and what they'd like to do. We found out that parents are great agents of change because there's a passion for the child and the earth. And in effect, a lot of parents would like to see the school moving toward an ecology center of sorts. Now you take, when Coke and Pepsi were negotiating exclusive contracts, then that was defining the culture of the school, and the school was actually being paid extra amounts based on the amount of soft drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So as you look at the commercialization of a school, if you want to move it to an ecology center, then you want to get all the commercial influence out of it. And then you want the kids to experience the day. You know, if they go in to lunch and they have a styrofoam food tray that they have to throw out, that's one experience. That's one learning thing. If you get rid of those styrofoam trays, which a lot of our parents have done, they may have parents coming in to wash the permanent trays. If the kids are then composting and all of that, they're having an experience that's teaching them at school about how to live in a way that has less impact on the earth and not just a consumptive lifestyle. And there are just all sorts of fun things that parents are doing in schools that way.
Excellent. Well, you are listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Lynn.
I'm Ani.
We're here today with Dick Roy from the Center for Earth Leadership. And we also have, if you want to contact us, we've got Gmail. We've got at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And the phone here for your calls is 503-231-8187. And we have LJ on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's
Happy
up?
Happy New Year. Well, here's the deal. You were talking about the environmental school. And we have the environmental school in my very neighborhood on 34th and Salmon.
Yes, it's true.
Yep, and it's absolutely amazing to see the kids putting in their gardens, et cetera, and getting in touch with their true mother, the earth. Just a couple of quick comments. Your feelings on collectively run businesses. There are a lot of collectively run businesses here in Oregon, in Portland, like City Bikes, like the People's Food Co-op, like Microcosm Press, like the Red and Black Cafe, like Laughing Horse Books, et cetera, et cetera. And your feelings on collectively run businesses. And just a couple of quick points. You don't have to do your business with the banksters. There's a website called moveyourmoney.eud that shows you how you can take your money out of the banksters and put it into local credit unions and locally run banks.
Can you, LJ?
Speaking of collective businesses, the KBOO pledge drive will be coming soon, so.
Oh, that starts in a week.
So in a week, so send your money.
So pony up.
Pony up.
LJ,
KBOO is your voice. Keep your voice alive.
LJ, you gave a website a moment ago, and I want to make sure we have that for people that are listening.
Okay, moveyourmoney.eud.
EUD.
Right.
As opposed to the ever-popular EDU.
Right.
Okay.
It could be EDU.
Okay, let's try EDU.
And like just a couple of quick things.
Uh-huh.
And I'll get off the air. liberate your mind and don't mourn. Organize.
Or as Judy Berry would say, don't ohm, organize. All right.
Thank you for the show, you guys.
And I think the website you're talking about is Move Your Money Project.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Okay.
All right. And that seems like a good project to look at. Thanks very much for that call this morning. And
well, just one response. I think those were all great points. And the I have had preliminary conversations with experts and people involved in co-ops, and I think if you're interested in localizing, then one great idea would be to have public policy in Oregon that would promote the co-op as a preferred form of business. The reason for that, in terms of globalization and localization, is that co-ops are, almost by nature local, and there's a sense of community and a sense of being empowered if you're part of a co-op. Even if you take the largest one in the United States, REI, which really seems a lot like a corporation, and it's run a lot like it, even that one, the board of directors you have a totally different tone. And of course, most co-ops are very small. But if we had the co-op as a preferred form of business in Oregon, then you would have people operating in the context of a co-op, which is at least in theory far less oppressive, and everyone has a far greater stake in it, and people, have a sense of community.
And is, at least as a goal, non-exploitative relationship amongst the workers.
Right. And there's no one, there are no shareholders there. The problem with economic globalization and the capital markets of the world is that the real winners are those that, that either are at the top or own the stock, one or the other.
Well, right. Even as I've been researching this, even John Maynard Keynes said that local was better. In a speech in 1933, apparently, he said, "I sympathize with those who would minimize rather than those who would maximize economic entanglements among nations. Ideas, knowledge, science, hospitality, travel, these are things that their nature should be international, but let goods be homespun whenever it is reasonable and conveniently possible, and above all, let finance be primarily national." Which right. I think he meant that as local and not, certainly not international.
And not globalized.
Not globalized, yes.
Interesting. Interesting that. We have a listener who has messaged us using the new technologies that Lynn and I are trying to get a handle on, asking if these very localized efforts eventually can culminate in a larger organized action.
Your listener there may have stronger opinions and better views on this than I. What we have felt was that individual uncoordinated actions, as long as they're focused on the same goal, and in our area, because we started really from the environmental side, it would be reducing impact on the earth, that those uncoordinated efforts are probably a better approach than try to coordinate some massive group all, you might say, marching in sync. And the if we go back to the metaphor of the mosaic, each of these tiles, in a way, is independently turning greener, but collectively, the whole culture is becoming a darker green.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've never tried to coordinate the actions of people. Now, those that try to bring together collectives and massive, there are a lot of things you can do by the internet to get a lot of people to focus on a certain point in time. But we're more in it for the long run and like to see these uncoordinated, long-term things with a lot of persistence.
Nice.
Very nice. And, we got a caller.
I was thinking we did.
Jay.
Oh, I was listening to this program. I found it quite interesting. And I kind of feel like a lot of people that just kind of a sense of hopelessness about what's going on in this world and as far as changing the degradation of the planet. And I feel, and I felt like this for a long time, maybe you could touch on this topic, is overpopulation in this country and the world. And I feel that's the main threat to this planet and the environment. Just your thoughts on that. That's all I had.
Thank you, Jay.
Well, I think, you know, I think everyone is concerned about population. This year we'll turn, you know, we'll turn the corner on 7 billion people. Current projections are we may level out somewhere around 9.2 billion in the middle of this century. And all of that is really pretty overwhelming. The thing about population is it's a bit more predictable. Consumption is actually an area of even greater concern because the whole focus of the of economic globalization, the capital markets of the world, is to increase consumption, to bring consumption, you might say, up to our levels. And that will have ultimately a greater impact than the number of people on Earth. And so we tend to focus on the consumption side.
And I think that it's certainly easier to get a handle on the consumption side because it's something, again, that we can all actively participate in. I know when we start looking at overpopulation, there's so many factors in that. When we look at the resource use, it's not equal around the world. You know, a baby born in the U.S. is going to use four times or six times. God, I think my facts are, my stats are old here. Six times the resources of a child born in a non-developed nation. So, you know, again, when we talk about overpopulation, so many times people think in those other countries. But when we talk about resource use, again, it's that's, I think, the crux of it. What resources are being exploited or used or required to sustain you know,
how many planets
our
do you
lives.
Take up? Was it, there's a website about that, I believe.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and then the thing is people need something they can organize their passion about. At one time, I tried to kind of resuscitate the local chapter of zero population growth. And if you go up to someone and say, hey, let's get charged up and take on this worldwide population, there's kind of a deadening feeling.
Deadly silence.
Now, if you say
that's a large project, yes, for a couple of people.
If you say, well, why don't we get charged up and get Coke out of the local grade school, then that really kind of gets the juices flowing. So,
yeah, you know, I can absolutely see that because really, again, it's your sphere of influence. It's what you're able to do. We can all make that choice. Well, I'm not going to procreate or I'm going to have only one child. But then we start talking about how to, well, normalize that and legislate that frighteningly. And that starts getting very, very tricky. Yeah. Thanks very much for that.
I think we have another caller. Dan, I believe, is on the line.
Yeah.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. I was listening to this, your introduction and several of your calls. And in your introduction, you mentioned powerlessness, feeling of powerlessness and despair, and people have kind of confirmed that, you know, in their calls. And so I have a huge plan to solve all kinds of problems at once. So how about that? Can I give that to you?
Go right ahead.
In a very brief way.
The answer. We're ready.
Yeah, that's exactly. Because what the the problem, of course, is this whole system of doing things has built up over time. And so it's not just one thing. You know, it's this huge combination of things, right? And so saving your paper cups, you know, it's like that's just not gonna solve it, right? So what I propose, and here's coming against powerlessness and all that, I have a quote from a founding father, and this is how it goes. We have, now remember, they're starting a country from scratch, right? They've just told the king.
I think we're there. Go right ahead.
They told the king to get lost, and we're just going to create things
Actually, they stole some things from the Indians, but that's
Well, let's not get into all that, okay? This is a big picture. I'm going for a big picture.
Well, that was actually part of the big picture. But go ahead with your answer.
Okay, here's
capital
the
T,
quote.
Capital
we,
A.
We, the quote is, "We have it in our power to begin the world over again." And I think that is a very beautiful thought. And even 100 years before the Constitution and all that, you think of these Europeans coming over, and let's not get into the Indians and all, you know, it's just going to distract them the whole. I mean, they moved in.
it was very distracting to them, too, I must say.
Yeah, they left European society and moved into the woods across an ocean. That's called beginning the world over again. And so my idea, so here's for our present day. Here we are in this situation, right? We're sick of it. It's a mess, right? So what I propose is, why don't we start new cities based on a new plan, a new way of life, because these gigantic cities have all grown up and people need want their cars so they can run miles across town to buy their, you know, whatever it is. What if you had a city? So I'll just give you the basic sketch. If you design cities, there's plenty of empty land in America, lots of it. You just go out, you find a place where there's water, and you make a city. You can draw a little square on, take a blank piece of paper. The square is 2.25 miles by 2.25 miles.
Dan?
That's the biggest city you'll have, 50,000 people. You have large lots. You can walk everywhere. You don't even need a car, because if you draw three main commercial streets down that 2x2 mile city, you could easily walk to, if you have three commercial streets, the rest is residential. You could have golf carts or electric cart, little would be sufficient for a little town like that. And it eliminates a lot of the problems. And secondly, you would have people grow, you could have perennial food plants on every lot. We could make that a zoning law. Every lot has to have fruit trees and nut trees and some perennial berry shrubs and perennials, so they don't replant. Anyway, so you can just take
You've really given that some thought, Dan.
Yeah, I don't have time to go into the whole thing, but I'm challenging people to think it. I just gave you the 2x2 idea and the growing your own food, electric golf carts, and walking to your store, and you can just dream up the rest on your own. Just draw out the little plan, and you can go the same place my mind went. You can develop your own new little society that automatically, well, let's say not automatic, but it eliminates so many of these problems. But a big city like ours, well, anyway.
Thank you.
I think I gave the basic idea.
I think you did.
Yeah. And self-sustaining, you know. The idea is, and people, small businesses,
okay.
Not giant corporations, no big box stores.
Sure, okay.
Little stores, a shoe shop, you know, small stores in a little town. It's going back to, it's a
All right,
different
Dan.
Way, a different way of life.
So, thanks so much.
Yeah. Looking at making a fresh start. Dirk, what do you have to say to that?
I think it's really important for people to have grand visions and to kind of reconceptualize things. For us personally, our focus is we take the existing structure and then determine how we can operate within the existing structure and make progress, knowing that ultimately that will cause the structure itself to change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great work to have visionaries think about.
Reminded me of a gated community, what he was talking about.
Well,
and also the old city is still there.
Well,
that's my thing, is like the old city needs to work on it. It's like when people complain about labor unions, I'm like, well, you might try to fix them instead of just destroying them. Work on what's actually there already.
Yeah, and I think that kind of thinking is important, but we've been called bunt specialists, not home run hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And
or
so,
baby steps, Bob. That was a great...
So we're kind of focused on what do I do when I get out of bed in the morning if I want to create, add a green tile to this mosaic of culture.
I think, and to me, it's far more satisfying to... live in the here and now. This is where we are. Let's do our change work together now. And I actually, there are many parts of Dan's plan that I think are totally right on. You know, if we even taking the city of Portland with our, you know, million folks, if we look at the greater metro area and the land use and all of that, if we start localizing and we bring it down to our neighborhood levels and we start looking at what each neighborhood needs to be sustainable, you know, where do the neighborhood food sources lie? What can we do with each other so that we can live and work close to each other, so we don't have to look at private automobile transportation to get from to get to our places of employment? All of these things, to bring it down to that small local level where we can have more direct impact and direct change, is a fabulous idea. There's no reason to go commandeer a plot of land that is not in use, because I don't think there really is any, ultimately. I mean, and I think that that may have also been one of the blind spots of the founding fathers.
Sometimes what plots of land need to be left alone.
You know, I'm just saying, with the here and
to
the
grow,
now,
yes,
to implement a lot of those good ideas right around us seems very much in line with the work of the center.
It is. And before we end, I did want listeners to know that the Agent of Change course that we offer without cost, we form groups of about 16. We will be offering them we have courses starting in February and April.
And where can they find out about that?
And they can go to our website for the Center for Earth Leadership, which is just earthleaders.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone is interested in being involved in the course, it's a lot of fun, and people get acquainted. And
can you tell us more about the movie tonight?
Yes. Well, the movie is Economics of Happiness, and it's produced by Helena Norberg Hodge. And she's really, in my view, one of the greatest proponents of localization in the world. And her personal experience has been, she's spent time in Ladakh, mm-hmm, which is an old, I guess, kingdom in northern India.
Yeah, actually, she was interviewed on KABU on Tuesday. So if people want to check out that interview, our own Kathleen Stevenson did it. I bet it's up on the web.
And in the documentary, she shows the impact of economic globalization on culture, and she shows options for localization. So
it sounds fascinating.
Excellent. We have just a few minutes left. So if we could spend a moment just talking again about the Agent of Change course, which is, I just find that so very hopeful that so many people have been through it, for one thing, and have decided to go ahead and be change agents right here, right now. One of the things that really caught me from a discussion we had yesterday, Dick, was you had emphasized that you don't really deal with the theoretical aspects so much. You're into the tangible, the what people can get their hands on right now to actually be an agent of change and to help fill in that mosaic to a deeper green with the world we have right here, right now, not waiting for the great leap forward, not waiting for the new charismatic leader to tell us what to do, but looking around us and being a part of the solution.
Yes, and in the Agent of Change course, we do go over theories of change, innovation, diffusion, changing context, but that takes that's a brief introduction, and then we get down to far more practical things. For example, an agent of change, we cannot tell people to change and expect them to do that. We're facilitating change, and we're always doing that with other people, which means we're inviters. And like one session, we have a discussion on inviting from a position or from the posture of imposition, or inviting from a posture of condescension, you're looking down, or inviting from a posture of opportunity as just an exercise in how you go about inviting people to be involved. Most of us invite from the posture of imposition. We think we're going to impose on someone, and so we kind of, from that starting point, and that actually turns out to be not a useful approach for the agent of change. So we go through what a posture of opportunity looks like. So it's little things like that. They're very practical, a lot of fun, exercises in class, small group discussions. People co-consult with each other, and that's the idea behind the class.
And again, offered free of charge, which I am so happy about, because as I mentioned to you, I feel so often there are things that we all need to know, skills that we need to acquire, discussion groups we need to be a part of, and yet they're not really accessible to folks that may not have the pocketbook.
Exactly.
So this is truly accessible to everyone that wants to make a difference.
It is.
That is wonderful. Again, if we could just leave our listeners with information about how to contact you for more information.
Well, you can go to the website at earthleaders.org. Our phone number is 503-227-2315. And Emily can provide information about the Agent of Change course.
I want to thank you very much, Dick, for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Ani, for being here.
Oh, and thank you, Lynn.
You're so welcome.
And thank both of you.
We've all been thoroughly thanked now. And,
it really has been a great discussion, and I would love to check back in with you again sometime in the future so we can see how things are going.
Okay.
So, folks, remember, stay positively revolting, and we'll be back next week.
And it will be Membership Drive.
Yes, it will. Happy, happy Membership Drive.